town or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden, exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this segment of the Hagman Hagman Report, portions of tonight's broadcast brought to you by AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. That's AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Visit AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. They've got non-GMO, long-term storable foods, less than 50 cents per serving, AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com, and HealthMasters.com. HealthMasters.com. Don't forget, we have to take care of ourselves. That's why I'm purple-sticked up and B12 and, you know, daily multiple. Great products at healthmasters.com. Tonight, this segment, right now, I'm so excited because Stan Deo is joining us, but I'm excited because Stan Deo was on Coast to Coast AM last night with George Norrie, and I missed that. I was actually sleeping. But you know what? I'm going to be listening because if you go to standeo.com, you'll see you can listen to hour one and hour two off of standeo.com. Plus, I'm excited because we got a package today, and folks, it's right here, taking center stage, Prophetic Perils, it's out, and if you go to standale.com, the George Norrie special, 25% off all Stan and Holly Deo books, DVDs, and CDs, enter the coupon code on the shopping cart, which was announced during the Coast to Coast AM show, so listen to that show, get the coupon code, and the special savings there ends the night, 31st of July. By the way, Prophetic Perils, End Times Events Revealed. This book is worth its weight, and it's weighty, of course. It's the finished project that demanded so much of Holly's time. 12, 14-hour days to get this done, to research and to write for the past 18 months. It was when you read through this book, Prophetic Perils, here it is, folks. When you read through this, you can tell the quality of the information and the accuracy. And, you know, people today, right now, they're waiting for some event to happen, the sword of Damocles to fall. Others expect more of an unraveling that brings great upheaval. And others anticipate enlightenment. Some speak of a great cleansing, whatever the point of view. Everyone, unless they're, you know, again, suffering from rectal cranial inversion, are seeing that there's something coming. And those expected changes can be summed up as the end times events. Now, that doesn't mean that the world is going to blow up and, you know, we're all going to be dust, nor does it pretend that man's extinction. But it does signal a major change. Prophetic Perils, End Times Events Revealed takes the end time signs, matches them to the first trickles of these signposts several decades ago to the current events of today. It's in this book. There it is. I'm going to shut up now. Wow. And bring, you know, Stan on
Well, we'll talk about a few of the things in there as the evening goes on. There's, as you will testify, with 20 chapters, it's absolutely jam-packed with information that is critical to understanding what's happening around the world now. be happening soon. You know, a lot of people kind of turn out books, you know, like a rabbit mill, you know, just turn the crank and out comes another book. But when you look at them, a lot of them are printed with larger type, larger space between the sentences, and a lot of white space around the edges to make it look like a thick book full of goodie. As you can see with Holly's book, there's no such thing as wasted space. She's pushed it right to the limit, you know, for the white space around it and spacing the letters. And, you know, it, she had to cram everything into 536 pages with about, what, 1,588 footnotes documenting everything. So you can use it as a really accurate witness tool to people who think, things are going as usual. And there's just so many things in there. I mean, like prophecies of like Branham and Wilkerson and Dudeman and about three or four others relating to the United States in these times, which, of course, is near and dear to all of us. And that may not be the most uplifting chapter, but what they have jointly kind of prophesied for America is the common factor is collapse, you know, imminent collapse. And what I think it was Branham back in 35, 40, somewhere where he had the dream vision, talking about he called it a beautiful woman will take over the United States and absolutely destroy it. She'll be evil and terrible. And so I'm having a little difficulty trying to relate that to, say, you know, the current Democratic nominee, beautiful woman. But anyway, the other part of it I can relate to. But Branham himself said the woman he saw might have been symbolic as the Catholic Church taking over the United States being evil. But I don't know. I certainly see this election going south as far as Christians are concerned. One way or another, it's a terrible time, isn't it?
Well, exciting time. And one that we have to keep our sobriety and keep a watch. And I think Prophetic Perils really lays out that in good form. So, yeah, it's something that, and that's why, you know, Stan, we love having you on and talking about the different events taking place, the different things that we should be watching for, and we are watching, and you're watching, and we're watching you watch, and, you know.
You know, one of the last chapters she was writing, or in the book, chapter 19, about the thinning veil, she's talking about that thin barrier between the parallel universe where evil dwells and our universe, and then, of course, there is the universe above all that, which is parallel to us, which is where God dwells. You know, there are at least three levels to heaven, maybe seven, but if we understand prophecy correctly, what she's writing about there is that pretty soon we're probably going to be able to see demonic characters, like kind of thin, ghosty-looking things that are in their universe parallel to us, right next to us, but not quite able to get across to us physically at the moment. But that day is coming. You know, I haven't seen anything, you know, lurking in the gardens, but I've heard reports of these black shadow characters, you know, and we've all heard the stories about the little grays and the hybrid human children with black eyes and stuff. This may be due to, you know, beings crossing over into our world. But we are very close. We're just very close to the world erupting into a violent confrontation on many fronts, collapse of the world economy, earthquakes increasing, volcanoes threatening, all this, and it will make people cry out for stability, for peace and safety. And I hear that line come out in various ways through political campaigns and, you know, news reports and stuff saying, what we need is peace and security, well, safety. They use different words, but same thing. And I recall the scripture say that when they shall cry out peace and safety, does that mean give us peace and safety or peace and safety? But at that moment is sudden destruction upon them. And the United States, as Holly points out in the book, is it needs to be weakened greatly, you know, militarily and economically before, say, Russia or an Arab alliance or you know, Gog Magog eventually, but before anyone can attack Israel, because America, even though we've got a weak White House, still will do some sort of defense of Israel against its enemies for who knows what reasons. It won't be for the right reasons. It'll probably be economic things. But anyway, that situation means that we see that the Middle East just coming to a fever pitch. Gosh, what, about 4 or 5 weeks back, I started talking on the show about the young prince, Mohammed bin Salman, and how he formed this Arab consortium. Well, Holly addresses this consortium in the book as the consortium of Arab countries that will attack Israel and be utterly devastated. They'll still retain some of their property in Saudi Arabia, the southern half of the country, but the northern half and parts of Iraq and stuff are all going to belong to, and Jordan will belong to Israel, the original borders that God gave them. She covers that in one of the chapters there. And that must happen before, you know, the Antichrist appears on the scene, and the false prophet, and then eventually the Gog-Magog war, which will be more like Russia and Turkey and Germany and the stand, you know, Afghanistan and, you know, Kazakhstan and all those over there, the stands, as she calls them in the book. So with the uncertainty, with the instability in the Middle East around Israel and the Palestinian thing and the need for a solution to the differences between the Palestinians and the Israelis, this just is almost pregnant between now and the end of the year with an explosion of warfare in the area. I've been thinking about, you know, Prince Salman, how if he were the Antichrist, you know, he'll have a short run if he is, because that's the first beast, as I understand prophecy in the book of the Revelation. And if he is wounded, you know, and near death or appears to die and then is born, you know, kind of lives again, that must be at the time when he attacks Israel with that Arab consortium or sometime around there. And if he gets knocked off his perch that quick, then the real strength of the bad Antichrist type thing will be the false prophet, second beast, in other words, who makes an image to the first one, you know, the great, you know, leader trying to do the right thing and organizing the Arab countries. And certainly that could be young Prince Salman. But I don't think that he will have as much power after that as the second beast. And that might be somebody like Erdogan over in Turkey, who I am sure was aware of the coup attempt long before it manifested, and probably even whispered in somebody's ear to make it happen so that he could get what he's been after for a couple of years over there, absolute, total authoritarian power over the over Turkey and its people. So he's going to be a real solid, long-time playing strength in the old Roman Empire there. You know, Istanbul is kind of where east meets west in the old western and eastern Roman legs of the empire. Anyway, I digress, but these things are covered in her book, and map, you know, map showing how the new property will be distributed as best people can estimate after Israel recovers or beats its enemies in the Arab consortium, and it's going to be a lot more property. And so solving the Palestinian issue might just be something like, okay, we've taken over the northern desert of Saudi Arabia, go live there. I don't know what it will be, but certainly there'll be a lot more property to give or assign to the Palestinians to get out of trouble. You know, get out of this disagreement, whether or not it'll happen or not, it's another thing, but there will be real estate that could be used for that there. And Holly also covers things about, you know, in the United States, about cities that are in trouble financially, in relation to what Perry Stone's vision had said, too, about what's going to happen to America. And she listed, I think, I've got about 12 of them here, all 12 of them, yes, cities that have already filed for bankruptcy protection in the United States. these cities are bankrupt. About four of the first 12 are in California. Vallejo, Stockton, Mammoth Lake, San Bernardino. And then you go over to Pennsylvania, to Harrisburg, Rhode Island. Over the other side, there's Central Falls. Idaho, Boise County. Michigan, Detroit's bankrupt. That's getting closer to you guys. Jefferson County, Alabama. Pritchard, Alabama. And those are you know, already just in bankruptcy, which means that their police force, their firefighters, their fire equipment, the hospital equipment, all kinds of civil services, you know, municipal services, are going to be thin on the ground, and people are going to get angry about this. And if our summers keep being as hot as this one, people are going to be irritable and easy to inflame. Other cities, mainly California, kind of dominates. San Diego and Bell, California, are facing bankruptcy now. Scranton, Pennsylvania is. Let's see, who are some of the other recognized? Gary, Indiana. And then additional cities that are possibly in trouble, including Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, San Diego, San Jose, San Francisco, Baltimore, Maryland, Chicago, Illinois, Cincinnati, Ohio, Honolulu, Hawaii. All of these cities are on the verge of financial collapse, and this does not make for stability in the community. And you can see it's like a breeding ground for protest groups, for terrorism, domestic terrorism, for people just, you know, finally say they've had enough, I want food, I want work, or, you know, and riots to start. So this is really, really close. We can, this year, between, you know, between now and the end of this year, I just see, you know, from what she's written and what I've read as well, that we're facing real serious trouble in this country.
Yeah, we are on a number of different fronts. And Stan, if we can kind of switch gears here, I would like to talk about the weather situation that we have in the country right now. I just wanted to know a little bit more about this heat dome, for one, and the potential that this has, if any, to affect our winter. And two, I read an article recently about the lack of hurricanes that we've had in the United States over the last 9 to 10 years. Now, they also said in the article that due to some of the record heat that we've been seeing, that sea surface temperatures and water temperatures are higher than normal, making for a perfect storm, if you will, when it comes to hurricanes. I know you keep track of the weather and whatnot. Do you see the potential for a much harsher hurricane season in America?
Potential, yes. There's a lot of factors that are involved in trying to answer that. Certainly when you have the tremendous heat localization buildup that we're seeing, this creates updrafts. It creates moisture flows that are abnormal when you have an abnormal temperature zone like that. If the solar wind is stable, we might be able to say yes, the standard hurricane season will be, you know, perhaps greater, and in the locations where it should be, you know, down around Florida and off the Mexican coast on the western side of the state. But the sun is not stable. The sun is doing some very erratic things. It's supposed to be quiet now. And you'll see a day or two in a row, you'll see no sunspots at all. And this has happened before, but we're seeing more little short bursts of this in this particular cycle, no sunspots. And then all of a sudden, you'll have massive coronal mass ejections and flares like we've had in the last 5 days off the sun. I mean, I've got an animation here I pulled down from the Soho site, and goodness gracious, it looked like a kettle boiling and spraying, you know, gases and flares and flashes everywhere. It when you speed it up so you can see the many hours in a few seconds, but it is abnormal, and that affects our weather and the potential for hurricanes. So are we going to have, you know, a bad hurricane season? It is very possible, but I'm not a trained meteorologist, so don't, you know, run to the cupboard and, you know, start throwing things in a bag and head for the hills yet. But do prepare anyway. I think we're going to see a lot of unusual storm activity, including unusual Florida, of course, is already known to be one of the high, lightning strike places. Colorado has its share, and there are a few other hot spots that Holly shows in the maps in the Prudent Places CD-ROM. But I've been watching the lightning here. Longer, brilliant streamers across the outsides of the clouds and going cloud to cloud. In fact, here in Colorado, a week ago, two women were just doing, normal life outside of some store there, and lightning hit the woman. She had some kind of a conductor in her hand, like copper or something. I forget what she was holding in the news article, but it burned her severely, of course, and damaged her nervous system. Lightning just came down out of the sky and hit her. So they're now making, periodic announcements during the storms that we've been getting here, that if you can hear thunder, you're close enough to get hit by lightning, even if the storm is 15 miles away, because it will go to the edge of the cloud formation and drop the lightning bolts there. It's not necessarily all inside the cloud and underneath it. It's on the leading and trailing edges you'll see this. So if they're warning people here, it means that they're seeing what I'm seeing, is that we're seeing an increase in the electrical storms. And that's not even a CME, that's just electrical storms. That brings flooding, that brings strong winds, tornadoes, hurricanes. And so I'm going to be watching, like everyone else that's interested in this, what is happening over the next few months.
Can you describe, to the best of your ability, the difference in dangers between regular thunderstorms and the lightning they produce versus heat lightning?
And normal lightning, you're saying?
Yeah, versus heat lightning.
Yeah, I've wondered about that, too.
Because we've been having a lot of heat lightning here, and it's going
without
to increase.
Clouds.
Yeah, without clouds.
Yes. And my mom used to, I remember when I was young, my mom, I used to ask about this, and that's heat lightning. And yeah, what's the difference? I'm sorry.
Well, they're both electrical discharges. With the storms, with clouds, you have water droplets that are the charge carriers, which build up the difference in the charge within the cloud to, relative to another cloud, or from that cloud to the ground, vice versa. And that makes a very kind of juicy, strong, brilliant lightning discharge. Now, dry heat lightning is going to be generated by the movement of thermal currents of air rather than water. And as far as I understand, in the past, dry lightning or heat lightning is less less energy in it than the normal rain cloud type lightning, because it doesn't have the mass of charge carriers that a water droplet system does. It's got just dust and air molecules being moved up underneath thermals and generating the charge difference. So I think in the main, I don't know whether you've been watching it or not, but the heat lightning is thinner and not quite so violent, isn't it?
Yeah. And it seemed to be more, very little ground, air-to-ground lightning. It's mostly in the sky.
Right. Still pretty impressive, but it's just that it doesn't have, I'm trying to put this in plain speak instead of amperage and watts and whatever, but it just doesn't have the oomph that lightning in the rain cloud storms does, because the rain cloud lightning is generated by much larger amounts of mass in the form of water molecules rather than air, which is much lighter.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And I don't know where you want to go from here, but while we were talking about the heat dome and the increased temperatures here in the United States, do you have any tips or advice for people who have gardens who are concerned that the heat might kill their crops prematurely?
Yeah, well, we're facing the same thing here. This year has been in Colorado here, really bad, really anomalous, in that we have seen the heat over a much longer period of days in a row, rather than getting up to, say, like 120 and then going back to cool over a couple days later. This is like in the hundreds and a little bit over, stretching out over weeks. Well, what we're seeing is that tomatoes, not enough rain. Birds, insects, you know, worms and beetles and this kind of stuff are just plaguing the place. I mean, everybody we talk to is saying they're having trouble. So what do we do? Hang on, I guess is the best word. We've been going out and killing some of the stuff, grasshoppers and squash beetles and things by hand and by poisons where we could. The birds are driving us nuts in the orchard here. We've lost all of our pears. You know, they've just stripped those trees between them and the wind. It's gone. We've got we're trying to protect our peach trees and plums with netting. But the little devils, they get through all the nets that you clip together. They're finding ways to get through and get into our trees. It's a daily ritual in the morning. Get out there with the sticks and go shaking the trees, you know, through the net, and then opening up one side of the net and chasing the birds out, the little finches and stuff like that. Today I didn't get out there in time, and one accidentally killed himself in the net. He hung himself somewhere or another. But we've never had this problem before in this number. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Chaos in the animal world and in the vegetable world. Advice: try to get some shade cloth, I guess, and shade your crops if you've got raised garden beds. If you have plowed fields or acreage that you're doing, it's going to be very expensive to do that. And I just I don't know whether people can afford to do that even.
Interesting. All right. So as I see it, I mean, even here in the Northeast, I mean, looking at this kind of from a cruising altitude, if you will, this summer, I mean, so someone described this summer weather-wise as being a great summer, except, we're not getting a lot of rain. But certainly, one of a pleasant, somewhat hot summer. But behind that perceived nice weather comment, I guess, we're looking at, in my view anyway, we're looking at some sort of bad cause for this, right? I mean, this isn't right. Or is this just a normal, hey, this happens, it's summer, it's going to get hot. I guess, yeah, go ahead.
This is the worst weather, the most chaotic and strange weather I've seen in 20 years. Here where we are, and the neighbors and old-timers here say, yeah, this is very unusual, because so many things are going wrong. I mean, with the insects and the birds and the wildlife, and it's just screwy. It really is. This heat dome that Joe's mentioning is, I think there's some graphics available somewhere on the Internet about this cap, this pressure cap over the United States. If you'll look at the weather over the last 2-3 months, say centered over Kansas and Arkansas area, kind of north of there, there's a clockwise circulation underneath this dome, which is exacerbating the summer thunderstorms. We're seeing some really violent ones because of this trapped kind of, it's not like an inversion layer so much, I don't guess, it's just a trapped dome of air that's circulating in its own little thing. It's like, doing its thing and not being dependent of interacting with the rest of the world's prevailing weather system. It's the dominant player. And, once it sets up into this self-containing, slow-spinning vortex forming a dome of heat, it is kind of self exciting. It causes water to evaporate and spin up, and then it cools off, and it causes storms, and then they move eastward with the prevailing wind. It's just unusual. I think the good Lord is kind of irritated with Americans. I can't see it any other way. It's just too anomalous.
Got it. Yeah. Signs in the heavens and the earth, and so.
A few weeks back, did I talk to you about the Buenos Aires 868 star that exploded?
No. I mean, if you did, I don't recall that. No, I would. No, and I would recall that. Explain that.
Okay. If you go to our show images page and click on that green picture of Atlantis, it'll take you over to the subpage I generated for Coast to Coast last night. maybe what's happening to our sun. You know, I know that mainstream science has not yet come to the understanding of what a young universe we have. They still talk in billions of years rather than hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands. But what they have seen in this particular star, out in the Monoceros cluster of stars, it's the 868th variable star in that group of stars. In the space of, let's see, 1, 2, 3, in the space of 2 years, they filmed this over in the European Space Agency. They filmed that star blowing off a shell of dust and cloud, and that shell and dust going through its own planets, if it hasn't, out into space. And there's actually an animation of it, which I share in slide 40, that you can click on that and see it animated as this star explodes. But it leaves a red giant in the middle, you know, where it used to be. Now, normally you think, ah, red giant, it moves out, it consumes all of its planets, it's a terrible hot thing. But they found out something is wrong, because when the cloud moved down through its outer edges of that star system, of the 868 star, the red giant that formed was cool. It wasn't hot. And it still defies scientific explanation to this day as to how you can have a red giant that is cool. Now, in Ezekiel 32:7, it says, "And when I shall put thee out, I will cover the heaven and make the stars thereof dark. I will cover the sun with a cloud, and the moon shall not give her light." Now, Revelation 6:12, "The sun became black as sackcloth of hair." Revelation 8:12, "The third part of the sun was smitten." Now, it then goes on to say, of course, the light of the moon became as blood. The third part of the stars were darkened. The day shone not for the third part of it, etc., etc. Now, this cloud could be what is about to happen to our sun. Now, the Monoceros event may happen here. And since it can be a cool red giant type thing, expect anything. And because the sun is so irregular at the moment, and it, since 1992, has been putting out new kinds of ultraviolet frequencies and things, I think we should be very careful, because we know the sun is going to get so hot for a period of time. Whether Christians are here or not, it's debatable, but it's going to get so hot that men will hide in caves and want the rocks to fall and hide them from the face of the Almighty who has created this heat. Even the Hopi Indians are expecting this several-week period of very, very hot sunlight. And, you know, when they say that the light of the sun is like seven times what it would normally be, that's pretty intense. Even if it's ultraviolet, it's very intense, and you want to be out of it. So this is something that caught my attention. Now, if you click on that picture 39, you can see what I've just told you, the scriptures and the official explanation of the 838th variable star in Monoceros. Yeah.
Very interesting.
It is. It allows us to see how prophecy can happen.
And I see the scripture in here. It does in scripture talk about, I think it's in Isaiah, how the sun will, and it's also in the book of Enoch, how the sun will become seven times brighter, and the moon will also become brighter as well.
But then it will also become dark as sackcloth of hair. You see what I'm saying? So there's,
absolutely,
which comes
yeah.
first, the sackcloth and then the brightness, or what?
From my understanding, the brightness comes, the sun becomes brighter, the moon becomes brighter, sevenfold, and then the 3 days of darkness happens.
Yeah.
As it says, a wicked and adulterous generation seek a sign, and no sign will be given except for that of the prophet Jonah, who was in the belly of the whale for 3 days.
Well, I think you're right. I think it will get bright, and then it will throw off a shell. I've been telling people to look for that, because I think that we're seeing little warning signs of the amount of CMEs and flares that we're seeing in the last half of this 24 solar sunspot cycle. And this is how it's going to happen, I'm pretty sure. sure, because it does say, without a doubt, I will cover the sun with a cloud. And by the way, Holly does cover that in the, not this particular star, but the fact that there are problems with the sun, which are fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, absolutely. And prophecy seems to be being fulfilled in many different ways, from the earth changes to the, what we're told in Matthew 24, and then to this, the volcano activity that we see. Stan, do you have any updates on increased volcano activity happening around the world?
Well, around the world, yeah, there are two super volcanoes that I'm watching closer now. One of them, of course, is Yellowstone, and the other is the Lake Taupo caldera down in North Island of New Zealand. They recently have found a massive magma pool underneath the northern part of the island near White Island, which is a volcano, which they call the Zipper volcano, because once it erupts, before they even found this magma pool, once it erupted, it would cause a chain reaction, unzipping the North Island through Ruapehu South, Rotorua south of it, then Ruapehu and Lake Taupo, which are all together. And there are creeping signs of temperature variations increases in Lake Taupo. And with this magma thing, they're saying that we may see an eruption down there. And if it does erupt, it will be huge and take out probably half, if not three quarters, of North Island. So I'm watching that as, you know, we get the news reports, the quake reports, and the magma updates. And that's one area. Now, the smaller volcanoes around the planet certainly do seem to be becoming more active. Yellowstone is interesting in that if you go to that website, isthisthingon.org, Yellowstone, and get the thumbnail pictures of all of the seismographs that are placed around the public ones anyway, around the Yellowstone caldera, Yellowstone Park, you'll find there are about 29, I think, that they publish all the time. Yesterday, I counted half of those showing the intense, harmonic vibration in them. Now, they're like little quakes. It's like if you take a rubber eraser and push it against something kind of slick, but you're trying to move across that surface, pushing the rubber in the eraser, and you'll feel that jerking motion as it grabs and then it holds and it grabs and goes, and you know, it's kind of a jerky motion. And if you apply the same pressure, same angle to that, and try to move across this flat table surface, you'll see that it goes dut, 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 with a regular pattern, a harmonic pattern, you know, equally spaced, reasonably so. And I'm seeing this in the seismic graphs that are occurring. I'm looking at them as I speak. You know, they're being updated every few minutes. And I've noticed that 12 of those 29 are very busy. Now, in April, about the 4th of April this year, they went to a new type of seismic recorder, publicly anyway. Instead of the long ones that used to be multicolored, they've got short blue ones that are harder to read. But if you click on these, like Madison River, you'll see these little shakings that occur, is where the lines get taller and then shorter, taller and shorter. Little, it's like just a normal sine wave, except all compressed. And I'm seeing in Madison River signs of harmonic tremors, which occurs usually when magma is moving through cool tubes and getting stuck on the edge of the tubes that it's moving up, and it'll go like that, kind of jerky motion. And there's there at Madison River on the west side of Yellowstone. There's Old Faithful is showing this. The Lake Wyoming seismic recorder is showing it. I'm just going through all these. Flag Ranch, the southern part of the park, Hawks Rest. Now, you can get on these things and click on any of these seismic recorders, and it'll bring up the seismic event right now in front of you, so you can see it, you know, every few minutes changing. But you can also click on the history, the calendar above any of these, and it will show you for the any time period you want, but the default is the last 3 weeks. And when you do, you'll see an interesting thing. These harmonic vibrations, like mini earthquakes, M-I-N-I, mini earthquakes, is occurring between about noon and 9:30 at night. And in the mornings and early morning hours, late night, you know, say from about 10 o'clock to about 3 or 4 in the morning, it's quiet. So why is this happening in the daylight hours into, you know, very early evening? I don't have an answer for that, but something unusual is happening there. So that's the update I've got for you on Yellowstone and Lake Taupo. The other volcanoes, each has its own peculiarities, and but I see this as stresses in the mantle being manifest in the form of magma, you know, leaking into the volcanoes, and whether they're violently erupting or whether they're just kind of making noises about it, trumpeting sounds, as the Bible says, it's still an interesting change in the volcanic environment. Earthquakes are also kind of being interesting in places. I mean, we had one here today in Colorado that's north of us, which normally you think would be down Trinidad, some of the mining, but this was up on the border to Utah, just inland a bit from that, at Grand Junction. And there's not even a fault line there. So we're seeing more and more of these earthquakes in places where we don't know about fault lines being there. Even though that might be a risk area, there's no known fault line. Both things are increasing.
Interesting. Very interesting.
And Ollie has some interesting stats in that book. I mean, if, you, I think if you just go to the index at the front of it, it says earthquakes, chapter 2, volcanoes, earthquakes, chapter 3, tornadoes, wildfires, weird weather grows wilder. That's just the first chapter 2 through chapter 6. And then signs in the heavens and signs in the sun we've already been talking about. But that's she gives you hard maps there, you know, like what percent, say, like for destructive and dangerous earthquakes since 1950 to about 2016. My estimate here is almost 300% increase in the last 64 years in destructive and dangerous earthquakes. 300%. It's 286% exact. But anyway, she's got that in the book. And then in the next chapter, she talks about the increase in volcanic eruptions over the last, say, from 1855 to 2014 when the stats were released. And even that shows a 200% increase in significant volcanoes on a straight line, you know, mean average going to where we are now. It's just not letting up. In fact, in 2012, there was a real spike in it where it was about 900% over what it was in 1855. Definitely something to read.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to, I found that Bible verse about the sun. It's in Isaiah chapter 30, verse 26, which it says, "Moreover, the light of the moon shall be as the light of the sun, and the light of the sun shall be sevenfold as the light of 7 days, in the day that the Lord bindeth up the breach of his people and healeth the stroke of their wound." So right there we have the scripture, Isaiah 30, verse 26.
So these things are real, and the groundwork is obviously, you know, it's laid, and it's starting to form these events that we can expect.
Stan, if we could go back to geopolitics, I see here now Germany had a few separate terror attacks in the last week. We saw the many terrorist attacks that's happened in France, and Europe seems to be continuing to be plagued by these terror attacks in doing so in France and now in Germany. German officials called for a change in the constitution after the Munich shootings, call for gun control and military on the streets. Paris has issued a state of emergency. We also know that the failed military coup in Turkey has warranted a 3-month martial law. Is this going to be par for the course? You get a country that has, you know, terror attacks, one or two or three, some large scale, some medium scale, I guess regardless of the size. Is this the new democracy by taking away the constitutional rights of citizens?
Well, let's face it, they've been trying to take our guns away here, and they tried it in Australia, but they're still having to allow people to own weapons there. When the average citizen in your democracy is armed and can defend himself against its government if it goes astray, this is not the best of plans as far as a new world order and control over the populace. They want to do that. They want to blame these terror attacks on too many guns around, and probably one of the reasons the ISIS type terror attacks that have hit Germany and France and various other places recently, and Florida, probably the reason that this is not widespread here in the States yet is they have to deal with an armed populace. When you have countries and states that don't have people don't have the right to keep and bear arms, or you know, not to carry, and they have to hide their ammunition one place, lock up their gun in another part, and the trigger in another place. When you have that kind of control, then it's like a gun-free zone, in essence, to people that want to create these attacks. I think we can expect a lot more of this, and certainly the way the administration is, and it probably will continue with the woman that's in charge of the, you know, or is the candidate at the moment, Hillary. They will go for our guns. Hillary is a big anti-gun ownership woman, and that's going to precipitate a lot of problems here.
Absolutely. It's actually come out where Hillary's aides and staff, in an undercover video, they were caught talking about gun control and saying, you know, they're going to have to lay out some common sense gun control, with the bottom line of banning or you know, coming against the Second Amendment in the long run. And they said, you know, you just can't come out and say we want to ban guns. We have to lead in with the rhetoric of common sense gun laws. And this was on an open mic. I saw this yesterday. And it's been making around the rounds on the internet, which is interesting. And another interesting development is it seems Black Lives Matter in Philadelphia has turned against Hillary and is chanting in the streets that, you know, don't vote for her, she's a criminal, whatever that's worth. Maybe it's some angry Bernie Sanders supporters, but...
You know, my biggest concern is no matter what the popular vote would be, I'd say against her, with control of the voting machines and the number of illegals that will vote once or twice, the Democratic candidate is probably going to win by cheating at the poll. And then we're in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So.
And it's been proven that the machines, the diabolical machines have been proven over and over from primaries to elections that, you know, electronically they can be manipulated.
Yeah.
Without the voter knowing as much. They can be, you know, every third vote for Trump will say can be, you know, given to Hillary. There are countless ways that this can be manipulated and given to the Democratic nominee. And we would not know anything about it due to the technology that's being used to count the votes rather than going back to the system of handwritten ballots, which were much more efficient and with honest counters, much more accurate, I believe.
Yeah, and without hanging chads. Another thing I've been watching in this election process is that both Obama, you know, sitting president, and Hillary Clinton have been visited by the Saudi royal family, you know, by Prince Mohammed bin Salman and his father King Salman. They're putting money and support to this administration that exists now, and we know this is not healthy. In fact, in the last week, the king's son, Prince bin Salman, has been over here meeting with the White House. Are they wanting just nuclear missiles to defend themselves against Iran? Are they wanting more? Are they putting money into Hillary's campaign under the table, which, you know, there's a lot of talk that said that's happening, so that they can get favors from her when she's in office that go the way the Saudis want to go, and particularly they wanted to can't argue that point. But, you know, our country is being bought by overseas interests. There's just no question about it.
Yeah, and it has been bought. Stan, one last question here on Saudi Arabia. We saw stories in the news that, for some reason, American personnel in Saudi Arabia were in imminent danger. Did you see that and have any comment on why that?
No, when did you see that?
It was a story from yesterday, I believe. And I will look here to see if I can find it. But the, here, I'll just do a quick search.
I'm not sure. I think that was, well, I'm not going to say, but yeah, there appears to be some sort of internal thing that's taking place in Saudi Arabia.
5 days
internal
ago.
What did you say? Internal what?
Internal events that are creating some sort of a, well, go ahead, Joe. You've got it.
Yeah, from Zero Hedge 5 days ago. State Department warns Americans of potential imminent threat in Saudi Arabia. They're warning U.S. citizens of credible threats to tourist areas from Turkey to Saudi Arabia, specifically Americans, and warned Americans in Saudi Arabia about potential imminent threats against U.S. citizens and urged them to travel with caution. The State Department issued a briefing in Jeddah.
Yeah.
No further details on that. I see that July 22nd here. I see that Arabia attack, Jeddah, Saudi Arabia attack on Americans imminent. Why Americans? I know that they're unhappy with the young prince, a lot of them, because he's good, taking away the dependence on oil, trying to sell off the family jewels, in essence, and dealing with America. He's been kissing up over here, vice versa. Maybe that's why they're thinking Americans are fair game. I can't see here in the article.
Okay. It sounds logical. I mean, thinking it through, that sounds about right.
And I wondered if there was any connection between the warning that Bin Laden's son gave to Americans about 3 weeks ago, maybe, that he was going. He vowed revenge on Americans for the death of his father, alleged death of his father.
Yeah.
Well, look, you know, the Saud family, of course, were financially backing people like Bin Laden and others, smaller terrorist groups. I don't know what's happening in that country. It's very unstable at the moment. On the one hand, you've got the Saud family negotiating with Six Flags over Texas to build a massive Six Flags entertainment center there to draw tourism into Saudi Arabia and into the Arab Gulf state. On the other hand, you've got this internal turmoil because of the Saud family, you know, making sweeping changes in the law and trying to soften Sharia law so that, you know, women can not be so constrained by, you know, the Sharia law. And as Holly said, you know, okay, if they put a Six Flags with a water slide in it, can you imagine what it would be like with the woman wearing all these veils and stuff trying to take the water slide? It would be a disaster. Funny, but still, it points to the fact that laws are going to have to change if they're going to do tourism, you know, as one of their main incomes to the country. So you can see why it's the old and the new guard, the young millennials in Saudi Arabia who have, you know, wealth and TV and, you know, internet, versus the old-timers who probably still write with a quill pen somewhere. This is the internal strife occurring, plus you've got Shiite and Sunni factions within the country, and Arabia being threatened by Iran, both having opposing sides of the Islamic front. So, yeah, very unstable. I can see why they'd be threatened.
You filled up another hour, Stan. Yeah. Thank you so much for your time.
Prophetic Folks. Perils.
Yeah, Prophetic Perils. Perils, End Time Events Revealed by Holly Dale. Get it on standale.com.
God bless
Thank you.
You,
guys. Lord bless you now.
All right. Folks, we'll see you in Indianapolis on Thursday.